my goal was just make sure that everybody was just going to be happy with the apparel. Like, not only dominate the mission, but dominate the quality and the heart that goes into everything. Like, I always tell my guys that, like, dude, if you're not pulling emotions out of me whenever you're designing something, you're just designing it for fun. You're not designing it for a purpose or for a why. I'm like, you got to attach a why to everything you do.
We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smarter Destiny podcast, where this time we have my friend Corey Schaffer on the show. Corey is the founder of the Till Valhalla Project, tillvalhallaproject.com, which is an eight-figure brand that prints apparel, predominantly, honoring fallen heroes. Now, this brand is an impactful, purposeful brand, and Corey is as enlightened as entrepreneurs come. His brand donates a minimum of 20% of their proceeds to provide support and therapy to struggling veterans. And on top of that, the cool part is they also anonymously honor fallen heroes through producing custom handmade plaques delivered by their VIP customers. If you're scratching your head and going, "What?" Stay tuned, because we're going to get into that, because it is one of the coolest business models I have come across, and I don't say that lightly. I speak to tons and tons of brand owners. So without further ado, Corey has already given me a little bit of a glimpse into his story, into the brand, into the size, into his work ethics, and it's all fire, folks. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned, and without further ado, let's bring Corey on. Corey, how's it going?
Hey, Martin. Thank you so much for having me on. I've been incredibly excited. I've been seeing you all over the place, so I can't wait to just get started.
Oh, I'm stoked. Right, so as you probably know from listening to other shows, and the regular listeners will also know, but those new listeners coming on, hi, folks, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, because you're going to absolutely want every single thing that we produce. Corey, we like to go back to an origin story, a point in time which really serves as a kicking off point for your entrepreneurial journey, where you got your wings, you felt some pain, you got bitten by a radioactive spider, whatever that origin story is, with a little comic book nerd drop there. Can you take us back to that time and paint us a word picture?
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I could say it was, you know, that beautiful aha moment that you would think that, you know, every entrepreneur gets, but I would say, unfortunately or fortunately, it was a little more darker or brutal than you'd probably think. So I was in the United States Marine Corps in 2011. So 2011, I joined the Marine Corps in the infantry. I would then go on to be, I would then go on to go over to Afghanistan. So from 2012, 2013, served in Afghanistan. I served in Sangin, Afghanistan, and Kajaki, Afghanistan, as an infantryman, as an automatic rifleman. So it was obviously, you know, pretty crazy just having that life experience at such a young age. And that experience that we had over there had really gotten to a lot of the guys in my unit. So when we got back, our unit suffered from one of the biggest mass casualties as far as suicide goes. So my unit was, you know, the Marines in my unit were taking their lives at a unfavorable rate. And at this point in time, I was injured. So I had sustained some injuries overseas. I had also sustained some injuries in training beforehand. And that ultimately led to me having to exit the Marine Corps, even though that was my, you know, dream job. So as I exited the Marine Corps a little bit sooner than everybody else, I had gotten back to Florida, which is my hometown, and I moved in with my dad, and my new wife joined me, and, you know, we moved in with my dad so he can help me kind of get back on my feet. Military pay is not that great, so we had to kind of get things figured out. So I had to, you know, first get a job and whatnot. So fast forwarding through all that, I think it was about a year after I got out of the Marine Corps, I had developed some really bad habits. I was a very, very bad alcoholic, and this was me trying to cope. And I became very bad with alcohol, and I had, and mind you, I never drank the entire time I was in the Marine Corps. I was sober for years and years and years. So I developed really bad habits. And then one day I got a call from my team leader, and he tells me, he goes, "Hey, you know, one of the guys that I serve very, very close with, he called me and said, hey, you know, Dunson committed suicide." And it tore me apart from the inside. And I didn't really know how to deal with it. So I went deeper and deeper into alcohol and everything like that. So what ended up happening in my radioactive moment was this. I had previously bought a laser engraver for just kind of playing around, like just dipping my toe, so to speak, in entrepreneurship, you know, and just like most people, I got demotivated up front when I didn't sell my first item and, you know, just kind of sat there. Well, after losing Dunston, I went outside and I kind of scrapped up some materials, and I started making a plaque, not for me to give to anybody or anything like that. I started making a plaque for myself. Cause I was just torn apart. I just wanted to see him every day, you know, kind of, you know, tell him I love him, I miss him, like stuff like that. So, I ended up making this plaque in the middle of the night. And when I sobered up the next morning, I saw the plaque on the wall that I had built. And I was like, I can't keep this. I was like, there was so much heart. There was so much that went into it. I was like, I can't keep it. So I ended up reaching out to my team, my unit. And I said, hey guys, like, can we get in contact with Dunston's mom? And, you know, somebody rogered up and said, yeah, absolutely. You know, I know his mom. So I sent them the plaque and they just anonymously delivered it to her. And, you know, we didn't ask for anything in return or anything like that. It was just, and, you know, the next day on social media, she's like, oh my God, like this thing is beautiful. I, you know, it's such a beautiful tribute. And it really solidified like that aspect of giving plaques away. Hmm. And so what I did was I was working at AutoZone. I took as much time working at AutoZone generating revenue for myself to make these plaques. So the guys that I had lost previously, I started backdating, you know, the guys I had lost previously. And, you know, so I'd go on to make a plaque for Corporal Coy and Sergeant Beal. And I go on to make a bunch of plaques and just anonymously start delivering them because it was making me feel good. It was keeping my mind preoccupied. And I was struggling very bad at the time, also, you know, suicide as well. So there's one of the biggest things is it's one thing to see the people around you kind of take their lives, but it's another thing to understand it down to a T on why they did and to have every single emotion that they had and not be surprised because you feel the same way. So I was really just trying to escape that feeling. And the way I was doing it was by making plaques. So I kind of became the free plaque guy. It was, hey, every time a fallen hero passed, it was like, hey, you know, go talk to Corey. He'll go make a plaque. And that's exactly what I did. You know, we had heroes pass away in Niger, like, and it went past my unit. It started going past my unit and to everybody else. Just every time a hero passed, hey, a deputy street passed away. Can we do something? It was like, absolutely. So I just started, it became a full-time gig after work. You know, I went to college and then was working and became a full-time gig to get these plaques out there. And it got to the point where I was like, guys, I don't know how I'm going to keep funding this. Like I'm running out of funds. And somebody was like, hey, make a t-shirt. And I was like, I have no idea how to do that. So I made it on a Cricut, used like heat press vinyl, made my first t-shirt and was like, all right, whoever wants to support me, you know, let's do it. And, the name of the company came up, Till Valhalla Project, because every time we lost a brother, we always said Till Valhalla because it says, you know, it means I'll see you again. So that's where the name came from because, you know, I put that on every plaque I made was just Till Valhalla Brother or Till Valhalla Sister. It's just basically trying to let them know I'll see him again. So that was my radioactive moment, was like getting that first plaque anonymously delivered. And seeing the reaction, it really solidified it that I didn't care what I had to do. I just had to find a way to make it work, you know, find a way or create a way, but just don't let that opportunity fade because, you know, there's hundreds of thousands or millions of families out there who want the same experience, you know?
That's incredible. Literal tingles with that. And thank you for being so authentic with that story. And you know, I can't even begin to, you know, imagine what you're going through. But one thing that has struck me is that obviously the seeing what's going through the same thing as your brothers and sisters there, and being in the same boat, and being very aware, I guess, of the kind of end of the road, that their road being very similar to the end of the road that you're currently on, and probably that sort of struggle, therefore, to like get off that slippery slope and throw your attention and efforts into something which feels like, you know, like which is genuinely giving and helpful and valuable, and then figuring out you've got your mission here, and now figuring out, right, how can I fund it, and turning to e-commerce there to fund it, and wrapping those two things together is incredible. And so tell us about the products that you sell, and who's buying. I mean, are the customers who are buying from you, are they really just donating plaques and getting a t-shirt in return, or are they like who are your customers right now?
Sure. So to answer the first question, as far as like, you know, are they buying for the plaques? I tried to design t-shirts, tumblers, steel products. It's majority apparel. We're branded as an apparel company, so a clothing brand. Obviously, there's a lot of supporting products there. Memorial bands are a very big one that I do, because we use them so heavily to honor our fallen that, you know, I treat them almost hand in hand as far as like t-shirts and memorial bands. We do a lot of volume in both of them. And I've invested as heavily as I could to make sure that nobody out there can have a better product than me as far as those products go. So the people who are buying them, my goal was to make a product that was so good that even when you were marketing, like whether they paid attention to the mission or not, it was just a phenomenal product. What I didn't want to do is become one of those companies that says, hey, you know, this is a bad product.
Yeah,
but because the mission is so good, you know, buy it anyways. Yeah. I didn't want that. Like, to me, that's I don't know, that's just not where I wanted to be. Mm. So my goal was to make these awesome t-shirts, these patriotic t-shirts that appeal to not only veterans but patriots and, you know, expats and just families of fallen heroes or families of anybody who served. So just the whole military supporting community, including law enforcement, first responders, because we honor all them as well. So obviously we're very military oriented, but I do make plaques for fallen law enforcement and first responders. I treat them the same. Every police officer that comes through my door, he gets honored. Every firefighter, they get honored. Every military guy, I mean, everybody, they get honored. And my goal is to build the company so that way nobody ever doesn't get honored. You know what I mean? So, but that's the aspect there of like, I wanted products that everybody could wear, whether they support the mission or not. And usually the case is holy crap, I had no idea that this is what this did. Like, I just liked your shirt. And they're like, you know, cause obviously you got the inserts and the packages and they're like, dude, what in the world? Like, I can't believe that. And so they get really ecstatic and they reach back out to us and then they are just buying a bunch more. So it's, my goal is to just make sure that everybody was just going to be happy with the apparel, like not only dominate the mission, but dominate the quality and the heart that goes into everything. Like, I always tell my guys that, like, dude, if you're not pulling emotions out of me whenever you're designing something, you're just designing it for fun. You're not designing it for a purpose or for a why. I'm like, you got to attach a why to everything you do. If you want to give away a free gift, okay, that's fine. If free is not enough, tell them why. Is it because we just donated $100,000? Is it because we, you know, attach a why to everything? Because I want to be a why-oriented company. Every product needs to have a why behind it. So,
absolutely. And I mean, those of you listening right now, so tillvalhallaproject.com, you can go on there and there is loads and loads of photos of customers wearing the various products, and they look dope. I mean, they look seriously fucking cool, folks. It's very, very clear. And by the way, I'm just a little bit of background for you, Corey. I have sold millions and millions of dollars worth of t-shirts, right? Like my game started off in Teespring. The first real right. big things was Teespring, T-Chip, and then going solo, right? I've sold a shit ton of t-shirts. I understand exactly what goes into it, and yeah, there's a real difference between a great looking t-shirt and everything else, right? And the print locations and the color and the vividness and yeah, the design. You can see a lot of effort's gone into these t-shirts. I'm like, hey, can you start doing this for the UK maybe?
Right.
Experiment? We'll be getting right back into it, but first a quick word from our sponsors. Let me ask you something. What percentage of your revenue comes from email? If it's less than 20%, then you may well be leaving money on the table. With my brand, newbrew.com, 20% of our revenue is driven by email. Why? Because I myself got out of the way and let the email experts handle it. You see, with previous brands, email was often an afterthought, right? I would rely on sales, email sales, 20% off today, 15% off today, and rarely spared the time to do it properly. You know, split testing subject lines, keeping the list hygiene high, nurturing our sending reputation, and figuring out the ways to engage our list and drive sales without doing sales or discounts or scarcity, just by engaging them. So who are these experts? Well, in our case, they're a fantastic agency from Canada called And Bam, a fantastic name, by the way. And they've literally helped hundreds of brand owners, many of whom have been on this very show, generate consistently high revenue from email. Right now, And Bam are offering free account audits to Smarter Destiny listeners. They'll go through your email account in detail and make personalized recommendations to boost your email sales. If you then want to take the leap and work with them, then I highly recommend you do so, but you don't need to. Head to smarterdestiny.com/BAM and book a call. I highly recommend it. All right, on with the show. In the introduction, we talked about anonymously honoring fallen heroes. And I said, right, we're going to come back to that and hopefully you can explain what that means, because I feel like that's such a clever way that the mechanism you have for delivering these plaques to the fallen heroes, the way you do that is, I don't want to say how you do it. I want you to say how to do it, but it's incredible. Sure. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the goal always is and always will be to kind of be the faceless person who's delivering the plaque. So the way that we do it right now is that we have, I'm trying to think of where to start. Should I start here? Should I start my first plaque delivery? Like my first actual hand delivery. So a buddy of mine had lost his friend, and he was local. And of course I was the plaque guy. So he said, hey, Corey, you know, I lost a good buddy of mine. He died during a double lung transplant, and he was in the Navy, and he was a really badass individual. So I was like, dude, let's go do something. And it turns out his wife was local, so she was, you know, 10 minutes up the road from me. And I was like, dude, why are we going to send this in the mail? Why don't we just go knock on the door and give it to her? And so he was all over it. So that's what we did. Like, and we walked up, and this lady hadn't seen him. And I think I kind of misspoke there by saying like he just passed. Like it wasn't just passed. It was like his anniversary that's coming around. So it had already been like 2 years since he had passed away. But he brought it up. He was struggling with it. I said, hey, let's do this. So we went, and you know, this lady is getting groceries out of the back of her car, and she has two unknown individuals kind of walking up. And I'm like, ma'am, I know you don't know me, but I got something for you. And you know, he kind of brought the plaque out from behind the back, and it was like she like just kind of didn't know what to do with herself. And we had really, really good engagement with her, and we got to talk for, you know, over an hour just about her hero and his legacy. Like, my goal here is to preserve the legacy, so I want them to tell the stories and I want to hear it. So we went from that to my last handheld delivery. I had let the family, like, they didn't know, but I kind of told them, like, hey, you know, I got a project. I want to give you something. And when I went there, like, they had, like, done up the house, and she was all, you know, prettied up and, like, all, like, smells and, like, all. And I felt like I was being an inconvenience. Like, you know what I mean? So I felt like I was kind of intruding, like I was trying to give them this gift and preserve their hero's legacy. And I'm sure they didn't mind, but I felt like I was being an inconvenience to them by, like, hey, I'm coming to give you something. And then, you know, me and, you know, my entire team of 10 people walk into her house and present it. Mm. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing. But after that moment, we went to what we do now. And what we do now is that there is there's an application spot on our site for anybody, anyone who's listening, you, yourself, anybody can submit the name of a fallen hero into that plaque application. And it's not a matter of if, we select every single hero. And we will start doing recon on them, and we will go find information. Even if you don't have the information, we have an entire team that's dedicated towards extrapolating that information from the internet or wherever we can get it. We can get it from obituaries, cross-referencing books, data sources, whatever we can get. So we go find these heroes, no matter if they passed away 5 days ago, 5 years ago, 5 decades ago. We go find these heroes. We find exactly where to place that plaque, and then our team just executes. And the one thing I love about my team is we don't leave failure as an option. We make the plaque first, and then we go find where it goes, because, you know, we would never disassemble a plaque. We'd never let one go undelivered. So, like, we burn the bridges. We're like, okay, these 10 heroes, let's go. We make the plaques, and then it's like, crap, where do they go? And you know, and then my team will just go in, they start digging, and they start finding every piece of information, making small contacts and stuff like that with relatives or distant relatives. It's crazy. So that's basically what we do now. And then we go hand deliver. We go find one of our customers. So we go find those 10 heroes that need to be honored. We get all the information on where to get the plaque. And then I call up my customers, my VIP customers, those who have spent over $100, and we call them up and we say, hey, I know you just bought a t-shirt from us, but would you mind going to go drop this plaque off on this family's doorstep? Like, I think it would mean a lot to them. You know, we don't want you to engage with it. Like, we don't want you to go, you know, knock and shake their hand. We just want you to put the plaque on the doorstep, render a salute, and drive away, and just take pride in knowing how humble you are by helping this family honor this fallen hero without asking for any sort of recognition. And that's really what it's about. And it's been a phenomenal success, and it's only getting bigger.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. And I know it's not your intention, but, like, that involving the customers, like, in the mission is such an important thing. I mean, there's learnings to be taken away from like other, you know, all of the brand owners here, like that kind of involvement with your customers is just so critical and so important. And having those VIP customers and a way to communicate with them, customers love, if you've got a strong mission with your brand, I mean, there's few stronger than yours, Corey. But if you have a mission that other people resonate with, giving your customers a chance to feel a part of it and to be in a community and to somehow support that mission in ways other than buying your products is tremendously important for the health of and strength of your brand anyway.
Absolutely.
We do it at Nubru. We have a VIP group. Our customers, after they've hit a certain threshold, get emailed a golden ticket, Willy Wonka style, which is their invite into the community that we have just for the VIP customers. And I get in there, I do Facebook Lives, we talk about upcoming products, they vote on flavors that are coming up, they share stories, they might jump in and leave reviews for us, they might, you know, we've got on long form customer interviews, like hour long customer interviews with members from this group to really understand their experience and what the why behind their purchase, the why again, Corey, like you said, and it's tremendously valuable. Kevin Kelly, who's also been on the show, author of The Inevitable, he coined the term 1,000 raving fans, and that is like that's what you're doing, right? And he talks about you know, if you $100,000 a year, for example, sounds like a lot of money, but really, if you look at it in terms of you've got 1,000 diehard raving fans that love your mission, love your brand, really, you're talking about extracting $100 from each of them per year. And if you've got an incredible message and a valuable product that genuinely enriches lives, that it's not, you know, it's not like tricking them into $100. It's being a part of it. But he's talking in terms of maths here, right? To get to a six-figure company and through the support of your community and your raving fans. I have never seen it taken one step further where you're enlisting your VIPs in the delivery of value like that. But I think it's incredible, and that's why I just had to get you sharing that story that we touched upon before going live. So whereabouts can people find out more about you and your brand?
TilvalhallaProject.com that's pretty much where I live. You know, like I don't have much of a social media presence. I haven't focused a whole lot about that. Thankfully, I guess there's not a whole lot of Corey Schaffers in the world, so... if you type in Corey Schaffer and you spell it right, I am literally the only guy that will pop up. And so basically you can learn about me just through Google and through whatever's been published. But as far as the brand, TilvalhallaProject.com is the place to be. I mean, our About Us pages and of course our fan pages, TikTok for us is extremely huge. It's been insane. Like we didn't even have a TikTok and people were just, there was like over 2 million posts for Tivahala Project before we even made our first appearance on TikTok. Before I even made an account, you type in Tivahala Project and it was already 2 million posts and just people wearing t-shirts and doing plaque deliveries. Like I didn't even know my customers were doing plaque deliveries on TikTok and like recording it. And it's like, oh my God, this is awesome. So yeah, it's freaking phenomenal. You got like Ring footage and stuff like that of like people like ringing doorbells and like, you know, families reaching back out to us and like, oh my God, you know, some guy, I don't know. I couldn't catch his name. He went off too fast, but you know, he just dropped off a plaque, rang the doorbell and ran, you know, I want to find him. I want to thank him and stuff. It's like, that's it. Like, that's what I was looking for. Like that's the shit right there. Like, that's it.
That's there's your why right there.
That's it. Incredible. Dude. That is it. So.
So at this point in the show, we like to mix it up. We change gears. We shift into a different gear. And we go into the rapid fire question round, Corey. So I ask the questions quickly. You can answer them at your speed. You can answer them fast. You can answer them slow. That is your prerogative. But before we hit into it, are you up for that?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Are you two thumbs up? Up for that? Let's see.
Two thumbs up.
There they are. All right, let's get into it. Question number one. If you ever had to start again, how would you make your money?
Ooh, that's a tough one. So if I had to start again, how would I make my money?
To fund your plaque manufacturing, should we say.
I don't think I would change anything. The t-shirts have been beautiful. They raise awareness no matter what. Like you can wear it a couple times a week. It's not something that gets hidden. So, I mean, t-shirts are exactly where I'd go right back to. I think it's a perfect combination. It's a combination nobody would ever expect, but it's a perfect one.
Nice. What's the most common or biggest mistake leaders make?
Expecting to find people as passionate about themselves. I deal with that every day. So when you think that because you pay somebody well, or you think that because somebody asks for a high figure or something like that, that you think that they're going to put in as much energy and effort and have that drive and have that foresight. That is by far my biggest mistake that I make. In the words of a wise man who is currently at my shop running things, he says, Corey, just remember that not everybody's wired the same. Not everybody looks at the same things. Like not everyone sees the same opportunity or sees the passion or whatever. So that's my biggest mistake. And I would think that I see that a lot is leaders always saying, you know, I guess from every book that we ever read, they always say, oh, well, look for someone 80% as good as you. Well, sometimes 80% doesn't seem like enough. So I think that's the big one.
Who is a great leader, alive or dead, and why?
A great leader. Oh man, there's a lot of great leaders.
Who springs to mind first?
Boy, I don't really have one. The only one I could think of is my personal mentors and stuff like that. So like, you know, for me, that'd be Colin. Like Colin's always been a great leader for me. So.
It's probably
a weird one.
Yeah. So shout out to Colin Wayne at Redline Steel.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. What is one of your proudest moments?
Well, proudest moments is actually taking my first step out of the garage. You know, I was taking over my dad's garage and, you know, taking that first step and actually signing a lease on a building because I literally just couldn't make enough free plaques out of one garage. It was just kind of like that moment that said, like, you know, well, I guess that coupled with dropping out of college and quitting my job to fund something that had no reason to succeed. So it was still a really proud moment to say, like, hey, you know what? I'm jumping in with both feet. I'll figure it out on the way down. I'll grow wings on the way down. So that, I think, is my proudest moment, is getting out of the garage.
Nice. I like that as well. Like the getting out of the garage, the way you describe that, rather than like, you know, getting the lease on our first building, like getting out of the one foot out of the garage. Such a vivid picture painted there. What's one interesting fact about you that not many people would know?
Interesting. I was a terrible student. Is that interesting?
Yeah.
Like, I guess most people would never guess, but like, I mean, I stayed back in like the third grade and I was a straight D student because I was not good at school. So I kind of wasn't like ready to succeed. I think that's pretty interesting. Like a lot of people think that I was decent at school or something like that. And I really wasn't. I was god awful. So proves you don't need it.
It's a great one. What daily routines do you have, whether morning or evening, that have helped make you successful?
Well, one for me is a nootropic. So it's kind of convenient that you actually have one, but me taking like nootropics and stuff like that, it doesn't, like, for me, it's like making sure that you have the nutrition and, you know, making sure your brain's healthy and stuff like that. So that way you can kind of tackle all the things that happen on a daily basis. Other than that is always like kind of always take a step back to sit in front of your whiteboard and just do something. Like see what you can get out of your head. See what you dreamt about. I don't know, but oh, I guess that could have been my interesting fact right there. I actually obsess so much about work and about doing what I do that I actually have a office in my sleep and I work in my sleep. And actually some of the biggest moves that we've made at Tilvalhalla Project were things that I actually did in my sleep. I built entire plans and I get up on the whiteboard and I'll just jam them out first thing in the morning so I don't forget them. And then it's like that's actually like the current setup we have now at the shop. It came out of my sleep.
So is that, there's a famous story with Muhammad Ali who used to lucid dream. And what he would do when he was sleeping, it's in a similar way in his craft, he would fight against his opponents or spar against his opponents in his dream. So he literally woke up a better boxer than like when he went to sleep. That's quite incredible. Would you describe that as lucid dreaming? Like, are you in your like?
It's very lucid. It's very lucid. It's something, and you know, some people are like, "Oh, did you practice that?" I'm like, no, it literally just came out of obsession. I ran out of time in the day. I had to find it when I was sleeping. So you know, that was really it. So yeah, I never knew that about Muhammad Ali, but that was definitely the weird thing. Like, I'd get up and I'd be like, "All right, babe," like talk to my wife. I'm like, "I know exactly what we're doing. We're gonna do this. We're gonna do this. We're gonna bring this here. You know, let's go order this equipment. I know how many units because I mapped it out in my sleep." Like, you know, it's just weird. And then when I started doing that, I was like, oh, I don't know if that's healthy or a good thing. But I haven't heard about anybody else doing it, but it just kind of happened.
Well, actually, episode number one, I think, of this show was with my buddy Dave Loader, who's a sleep expert and a lucid dreaming expert as well. And actually, our next product with Nubru is called Lucid, right? I actually haven't revealed that publicly. Whoops. But it's packed full of the not only things that enhance sleep, but actually encourage lucid dreaming in the sleep, because it's just such a powerful tool to leverage, like that learning whilst you're asleep. But you were saying you haven't got anyone on your team who's as passionate as you, I would say your subconscious is kicking some ass and it's pretty passionate there, right? Your subconscious is the best assistant you've got going on, right? He's
I have one individual who really stepped up into a leadership role, and it's been really good. I would say, now mind you, I have about 60 employees right now, and we're probably going to be up to almost 200 by the end of the year, because we're doing all these. The reason why I don't have 200 is I can't physically fit it on my property. I've grown out of seven shops in 3 years. So but that aspect of it is like, we literally just can't fit enough people. But I love all my team, every person who serves Tilvalla Project, whether it's for a day, a year, or, you know, a decade, like everybody has put in their work to make sure that we can get these plaques done. So I don't knock anybody, but there's a particular individual who literally puts in the same amount of time. Like, we put in so much energy together, and he's, you know, is really good. Amazing. But it's hard to find people like that, for sure.
What's the most exciting question you spend your time thinking about?
What's the next level? I never want to be stagnant. I never want to stop. Like, I look at these brands, I look at these massive brands, and, you know, it's not revenue oriented. It's just size, you know, UK. So like, you're familiar with, Gymshark and stuff like that. Right. You got Gymshark, I think just hit like $1.5 billion. And like, look at the size of their brand. It's like, you look at them, and I have nothing against Gymshark at all. I think they're a really great brand, but I'm like, man, if they did that, then look at what Tilvalla Project can do. If my quality was the same, which it is, or better, you know, same, whatever way you want to put it, in my own niche, you attach a mission to that, you attach a why, and you involve everybody in across the nations. It's like, there's no reason why I shouldn't be there. So every time I take a step out of my house or I go to my shop, I always look, and I'm like, what is the next level? What's that next thing that I got to invest in? What is that next team member I got to hire? What is that thing I got to do to get there? And then when I get there, what's the next level from there?
Love it.
Always what's next.
What book or books changed your mindset or life?
Yeah. Awesome question. This is one I can do. So .com Secrets set me off on my path. Russell Brunson. Literally without that book, I probably wouldn't have got traction at all. I didn't understand crap about business. I didn't understand anything about it. And the whole strategy of just funneling people and getting them to, you know, getting them on board with your mission, and, you know, versus just trying to sell products and, you know, kind of getting a why and speaking to people and telling them, you know, stories and stuff like that. To me, that was a really big aha moment. That was able to get me to like get my first store up, and for me to get my first product, you know, really like sold to somebody who wasn't family, you know. So that book right there, it was a godsend, and I still read it daily, as close to daily as possible. I just kind of go through and I read through all my highlights. So I start off on a fresh foot every morning. And then Ready, Fire, Aim was the one that helped me scale.
Great.
That was by far one of my favorite books. And then as far as like brushing up and kind of keeping up on the craft and, you know, the kind of like the art of persuasion is Copywriting Secrets. That one helps me out a lot as well. Those are kind of like my three that I just keep on me, and I make sure that I keep thumbing through those and stay on top of it. So
I love that.
My next ones are going to be leadership oriented, because now I feel like, at this point in scale, I feel like it's less about how to generate sales or anything like that and how to get people on point with the mission. The mission right now does a great job of bringing people in. Now it's just how to establish good leadership and how to retain good people, how to attract good people, and how do you get people who are going to be passionate about honoring heroes and stuff like that. So that's my next string, is going down the leadership role.
Love it. What advice would you give your younger self?
What advice would I give my younger self? I would say be patient, but I know my younger self would laugh at that because I'm the most impatient person I know. Just don't quit. There's a lot of times, you know, when I was younger and stuff like that, I just quit on things. I was not a very call it smart. I don't know what to call it, but I was just not a intellectual kid, I guess. You know, I spent most of my school in special education classes. So, you know, and I was bullied a lot and stuff like that. So there was a lot of things that really that put me down and put me into depressions and stuff like that. I was incredibly overweight when I was young. I mean, I was probably 180 when I was like 11. So, you know, I there was a lot of things that creeped up on me. A lot of them self-inflicted, but at the end of the day, it was, you know, just don't give up, because I gave up a lot on a lot of things. And if I didn't, and I had more confidence in myself, and I didn't care as much about what people's opinions were, I would make more moves faster. But I just didn't have any confidence. So I just remind him to just not give up, like just kind of keep going. It will work itself out. It'll work if you do.
Absolutely. What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
Nootropics. It's almost like, dude, you would think I'm like sponsoring you here, but it's not. It's like literally just, I'm not going to pretend that I'm the healthiest person, man. I'm like, yeah, I'm not. Actually, it's kind of the joke of like, you know, you usually see really good, healthy entrepreneurs and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't deem myself to be crazy healthy yet. I haven't figured out that whole strategy there, but, you know, keeping the mental health, going past food and drinks and stuff like that, staying with nootropics and kind of staying good with your mental health. And obviously you should probably have some good physical health to go with that too. But that's my big thing, is like, I'm always trying to like push it on people and stuff. Like, you know, my guys at the shop and they're like all groggy and stuff. I'm like, hey, let's take some of this. Let's get back to the grind. Let's go. So that's the only thing I really push on people.
Nice. And definitely, obviously second that. You know, nootropics, it's a massive space and there's so many options out there, and your brain is such a remarkable, crazy thing. Yeah. that nootropics is, I attribute a lot of success and so on to nootropics over the time, and obviously that's what led to forming Nubrew. And then the final question, Corey, back on you, the final question, and it's one of my favorite. What makes you happiest?
Personally, my wife, like that's the only thing that's kind of kept me going. You know, there's been a lot of times, and I'm very open about it. You know, there's been a lot of times where I didn't want to be here anymore. You know, it's like, one of the hardest things I had to do, let's see if I can not choke up while saying it, but, one of the hardest things I had to do was kind of keep going when I didn't want to anymore. And that was something I struggled with a lot, and one of the hardest things I had to do was, you know, explain to my wife, like I couldn't pinpoint the feeling why I had success in business and why I had a beautiful relationship and why I had, you know, essentially everything you can ask for, you know, and why I still just didn't want to be here anymore, and I couldn't put my finger on it. So she pulled me out of a lot of this, and she helped me, you know, kind of see the brighter side. And, you know, from her helping me out and from her kind of keeping me from going too far down into the depressions, and, you know, for her keeping me from, you know, essentially taking my own life. But from that came the realization that I understand now why we do. I understand why a lot of veterans commit suicide. And that's why I'm actually, don't ask me a name yet. I don't have a name or even a strategy here, but I'm actually going to write a book about the discovery I made, because by telling it to veterans and making them understand like why do they want to kill themselves? Why do so many veterans want to kill themselves? There's 22 veterans a day, give or take, you know, there's 22 veterans a day who are going to kill themselves. And it's like, no, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's PTSD, or, oh, it's, you know, they're combat. It's like, okay, well, what if I told you most of them didn't even see combat? So now what? What's your thing? Is it still PTSD, or is it, you know, what is it? And I'm like, I had to explain it to them. I was like, guys, it wasn't the things that I seen that made me want to kill myself. It was like, the point was, as I was 22 years old, I've done more things than most people ever would in their entire life. And I get out at 23. crippled, jacked up, and I have no sense of value. You know, it's like the best part of my life was behind me. It's like, I'll never be in another engagement again. I'll never be, you know, pulling people off of a stretcher. I'll never be, you know, going out and patrolling with my guys. Like, I'll never do that again. And it's hard to move forward when you think the best of your life is behind you, especially when you're so young and literally the most impactful things that'll ever happen in your life has already just happened. It's like weird. It's so, you know, I'm like, you were in charge of millions of dollars worth of equipment. You were in charge of people's lives, you know, at 20 years old, treading Afghanistan. Like, you know, we were so in charge of like ourselves, and you know, we had to make sure that we were going to take each other home. Like, everybody was going to go home. It's like, that was the big thing. It was like, but now 2 years later, fast forward, you know, I'm not old enough to own a gun in California, and you know, I'm barely qualified to flip burgers at Burger King. You know,
yeah, where's the purpose now? Like, what's,
yeah,
what's,
there is none. Yeah. You know, it's like the biggest demotion of your life, but you never train for it. You never think about it. You just kind of walk out and you're just like, okay, this is it now. Where do I go? Nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows anything about you. And then, you know, and now it's like, okay, I'll never be that badass again. So what's the point of moving forward? And that's why guys are going. It's like, they don't see any purpose. They live their entire life in 4 years. Hmm. And that's why you see a lot of veterans that can't let it go. You see guys that are wearing veteran things all day, like, because that was the most important thing to them. You'll see guys wearing veteran hats and vets, and there's nothing wrong with it. But that is what they pride their life on. Whether it was 2 years or 4 years, their entire life now is about being a veteran. So when you strip that away from somebody, that's why you get things. So what makes me happy is having my wife here. That's everything else can fade away. As long as she's here, I'm good. But also giving veterans the realization of why they feel the way they do. I posted that on Facebook, and I get so many messages, even on a daily basis, of people going, holy crap, dude, I had no idea why I felt the way I did. Like, why I was always looking at my firearm. Like, you know, I had no idea. And for me to like get that message from people, it's like, yeah, it took a lot of drinking and downside to get to that conclusion. But at the end of the day, I'm here to share it with you. So yeah, those things really make me happy. Well, and of course,
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And yeah, let's talk offline as well. I've got some advice around if you want to write a book in a way that doesn't feel as painful and hard as writing an actual book in the same way that I did it. Well, you know, I'll give you some points there and see if that helps. But
I'll take them.
Wrapping up here, have you got any asks or requests of the audience listening today?
Nothing that has to revolve around my brand. Like, you know, I don't care what brand you support or anything like that. Just do your best to raise awareness for the 22 veterans who are taking their lives on a daily basis. You know, what if it's not the Valhalla Project, there's other brands out there that do the same thing. Just wear whatever's comfortable to you. Do whatever you have to do to make sure that, you know, the message and the purpose is getting out there. And of course, if you want to help us deliver plaques and honor heroes, like, I would love to have you, you know, part of the, we call them Legacy Guardians. So I'd love to have you part of the Legacy Guardian team. But at the end of the day, you know, business or not, you know, the objective is to save lives and honor heroes. So do that in whatever way you see fit. And, you know, if you are struggling yourself and you are a veteran, or you know, of veterans or even law enforcement and first responders, they struggle with suicide as well. Like, you know, just keep this in the back of your mind that, you know, it's not going overseas that you really have to worry about. It's when they come home. So it's the battle just starts when they get home. So the war is just starting. So make sure that you guys are kind of staying up on that and doing what you can to raise awareness, whether that's writing 22 a day on your window of your car, which I'm about to go do. I just didn't do it, but I'm about to go write 22 a day on the back of my window and kind of just go draw it all over my car just because I feel like it'll do something, you know, just do things like that, brand or not.
And ladies and gents, if you want to reach out to Corey Shaffer, find him on Google or tillvalhallaproject.com. where yeah, it's worth it just to read the About Us page or check out the cool and very, very nice looking quality gear that they sell. But Corey, this has been a deep podcast. This has been I'm very grateful that you've been so authentic with your story and your why, that you're holding your pain close and shallow to the surface, but using that in a valuable, productive, positive way. And that's so incredible that you've found the strength and the purpose and the way and the methodology to do that. You've turned that, what some people might perceive as a weakness, into an actual strength, and it's carrying you forward, and your massively successful brand that employs so many people and then helps so many hundreds of thousands of people outside of that is incredible. Don't stop doing what you're doing, brother. It's so good, and you're an inspiration, and I encourage anyone listening today to reach out to Corey and tell him as such. But Corey, for now and for this episode, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us, being a great guest. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it, and I'll gladly come on again whenever you're ready.
Sounds good. Round two. Take care, brother.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all, and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.